Trying to finish up this idea of causes of the Shoah. We spoke about speaking during davening, speaking in shul. We went through that last week. And basically, there's a Zohar that a person who speaks in shul, either in a time when you're not allowed to speak or things that you're not allowed to speak, is mamash mechal l'shem shamayim. He severs his connection to Klal, and really terrible things. So again, a lot of things sometimes we're not familiar with how serious they are. They don't seem so serious to us. I mean, the physical world is like that too. Sometimes what we would consider not so dangerous or harmful or whatever, but a doctor would know that it's terribly dangerous and life-threatening even, and you wouldn't consider it anything. Right, inhaling certain things or whatever, right, that you don't see the result immediately. You don't choke, you're not poisoned or whatever, but it has an effect on your body long range that's harmful to the point of taking away your life. Right? A lot of things like that. Without bringing up an old machlokas, but for the sake of MS, right, there are those that say that antennas of these or whatever are very dangerous. They don't seem to be anything. You don't feel anything, and you know, you don't walk over them and you know, see eggs frying or your hair singeing. But there are definitely opinions that they are life-threatening, dangerous things. So it's possible to have things that to us seem almost innocuous. I mean, what's the big deal of talking in shul? And yet, from a standpoint of someone who could see the spiritual dangers and harm that's caused, it's devastating. So it's possible that this could be the cause of tremendous calamities, even though it doesn't seem like, you know, one of the more serious sins, but that's to the untrained eye. The some say, the Chafetz Chaim says, that he gives an example. He says that before Mashiach comes, all of the cheshbonos in the world have to be settled. Right? The Rebbeinu Shem has a plan for the world or whatever, and a lot of that, how that plan develops and unfolds and how quickly it is implemented depends on us. And therefore, hakol bidei shamayim chutz mi'ira shamayim. So you can't say, well, if God made a plan, how does he come? He has to speed it up, you know, before Mashiach. He should have planned it out well. But a lot depends on human interaction, because the Rebbeinu Shem doesn't control our Bechira. He gives us Bechira. And how Mashiach comes, and if when he's going to come, and depends on our Bechira. It's one of the reasons the Rambam says that no one can know how exactly Mashiach's going to come, and when he's going to come before it happens. One of the reasons is that it's not something that can be set ahead of time. It's something that is fluid and depends on us. And even the Rebbeinu Shem doesn't control our Bechira. So, therefore, before Mashiach comes, it says that all the neshamas that had to come back into this world and get their din and gilgulim or whatever, which I don't want to go in, we discussed that once, what that is and how it works or whatever, have come into this world and have to leave the world again in a specific way or whatever. And therefore, the Chafetz Chaim says that a lot of events that in the past took hundreds of years for changes to be made, he saw in his time, we see even greater than that. I mean, you see the fall of the Soviet Union, right, and overnight, right, something that should have taken years and years and years. Right, and all the political analysts said, you know, that they perhaps understood that it may have been coming, but they didn't see it for another 30 to 50 years, not overnight. So a lot of things happen very, very quickly. The science says it's like the world's on fast forward, because a lot of cheshbonos have to be made. And he says that a lot of neshamas had to come into this world that needed kaparas and had to leave the world in gruesome ways, because that's what that neshama needed. And even though the Chafetz Chaim was nifter before the actual World War II started, before the Holocaust, but he said many times that he sees a terrible calamity, catastrophe happening, and that the Yeshua would only be in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael would be the Pleita, the Hoya Pleita in Eretz Yisrael. But he said, it's much worse than what happened. The First World War is going to happen soon. And he understood that part of it was this. And therefore, it's beyond our comprehension. It's nothing to do with schar and onish of any specific generation. It has to do with neshamas that were brought into this world specifically to leave this world in gruesome ways, and whatever other things that affected living people who had to be affected by this and learn from it or whatever, that's a side thing. So this is something that's beyond our comprehension, and therefore there's no way of saying what the cause or whatever. It's all things that have nothing to do with the here and the now. It's things that have to do with cheshbonos from the past. That's the Chafetz Chaim. Others say that this was for the future. In other words, there's a concept of Chevle Moshiach, Milchemes Gogu Magog. Some even say that Milchemes Gogu Magog was the Second World War. And even though Moshiach hasn't come yet, there's a very short time between the Second World War and now. And this is all the time of Ikvus of the Mashiach, preparation for Yemos HaMashiach, and the Tzaris that will come beforehand. And Yaakov Kamenetsky says that even the emergence of the State of Israel was for the sake of giving people a chizuk after the Tzara of the Holocaust. And he compares it, let's mention this now. He says like this, he says that Moshe Rabbeinu went to Paro and he asked for 3 days in the desert, right, which seeming they were going to go back. And that was a lie, because the Roshim told him he's taking him out of Mitzrayim. So there are many different answers to that question. Why Moshe Rabbeinu, why the Roshim told him to tell him 3 days in the desert when that wasn't really what was going to be? Yaakov Kamenetsky says, based on a vort from I think Rabbi Yonason Apeshitz, he says really that was supposed to be. What was supposed to be is they were supposed to leave for 3 days and come back, because they weren't there the full time. But the Rabban Shem saw that because of the tsaris that the Mitzrim were bringing on the Jews, many Jews were totally almost assimilated. And if the Rabban Shem waited till the 400 years were up, there wouldn't be any Jews left to redeem. So therefore, what we know is that the Rabban Shem decided to do it early and to take them out early. And that wasn't the best thing. That was based on our bad Bechira. Because if we had waited, that would have been the end of all the Golios and Tzoros. Now we have to make up for it over history. But that's what we know. But the truth is that it's possible that if Paro would have agreed to let us go for 3 days in the desert, that's all would have been needed. We would have gone for a Shabbaton in the desert with Moshe Rabbeinu, had a lot of chizuk, right, and come back to Mitzrayim to be able to survive the next 190 years. That would have been the ideal, right? We couldn't, what's it called, stay there till the 400 years stam, because we wouldn't have made it. But we needed a chizuk. So if Paro would have agreed and not refused, then we would have gone out for 3 days and come back. It was true. It wasn't a lie. 100% true. And basically, it was needed for the Jews that were weak, that chizuk. Now, the Rabbi Yonason Apeshitz says that's the same thing that happened by Bayis Rishon. Really, when we went into Galus, Bayis Rishon, we should have been there till Mashiach came. There was no geula. There won't be a geula from Churban Bayis Rishon till Mashiach comes. So what happened by Bayis Sheni? Bayis Sheni was not a geula. It was a pekida, meaning that the Rabban Shem saw that after 70 years in Bavel, the people, many of them, reached such a low level that if he waited till Mashiach comes, there would be nobody to redeem. So therefore, he brought them back to Eretz Yisrael temporarily. They knew, there was a lot of sources, they knew that the second Beis Hamikdash eventually was going to be destroyed. And the Ravid says that's why they weren't even Mekadesh it completely, because they knew that it was only temporary. And the purpose was basically for the weak people. That's why Ezra brought all the Psulim to Eretz Yisrael. And many of the Talmidei Chachamim, most of the Talmidei Chachamim, stayed in Babel. Because they knew, according to this opinion, that it was only a Pekida. Had they come back anyway, maybe they could have made it into a Geula. That's what the Gemara says. They should have come back. But Lamaisa, they didn't come back because they understood this was not the Geula. And they stayed in Babel. Who came back? The weaker people. The Psulim. The people who were had no Yichus. Or bad Yichus. Those are the main ones that Ezra brought out of Babel to Eretz Yisrael. And that was to give them Chizuk for another 420 years, that they could go back into Galus till Mashiach comes and still survive. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky extends that. And he says, after the Holocaust, the level of Jewish pride reached such a low that many Jews, unless they were very strong Yidden, right, gave up hope of being Yidden, didn't want to be identified as Jews, just wanted to disappear into the woodwork. And many, many Jews would have been lost if it were not for the establishment of the State of Israel. And this really applies till 1967. From after this, the Yom Kippur War, and even between the Yom Kippur War and the Six-Day War, things changed. And today, it's not like that. But originally, it was like that. That it was a tremendous source of pride for even the weaker, almost assimilated Jews. They were proud to be Jewish. They had a state to associate with, and an army, and the successes of the Jewish state. And it was mainly for the weaker people. The stronger people didn't need that. People who anyway had a kesher to Yiddishkeit and weren't going away didn't need that strengthening. But the weaker ones needed it, said Rabbi Yaakov. So just like in Mitzrayim, they needed 3 days in the desert to give them chizuk, to be able to survive till the Geula would come. And just like in Bayis Sheni, they needed 420 years of chizuk to be able to go back into Galus until Mashiach came. After the Holocaust, they needed, if that was Gog u'Magog, or that was the Tzoras of Ikvus of the Mashiach, but Mashiach wasn't imminent, then there had to be something to give people a chizuk before, in order to keep them going until Mashiach came. And Rabbi Yaakov said that was one of the functions of the State of Israel. Truth is that pride, that to a certain degree between the Six-Day War and the Yom Kippur War, wore off. And the people who adopted needed that chizuk. A lot of assimilated Jews, surely left-wing Jews politically, now don't take pride in the State of Israel, just the opposite. They want to disassociate themselves because they look at us as conquerors, occupiers, and who knows what else. So today, I don't know if it applies 100%, but it still applies to a certain segment of people who are strange, that they still have that connection. You see kids come here, birthright kinds of things or whatever, that have no shaykhus to Yiddishkeit as Yiddishkeit, but it gives them a connection to being Jews and to other Jews. That's also something positive, because without that connection, they're lost completely. With that connection, there's always a hope. They'll go to the next stage. They'll go the next step up. Right? So that's what Rabbi Yaakov says. Rabbi Yaakov says that the Shoah could have been, well, he doesn't say this part, but some say Shoah could have been the Tzaris of Ikvus of the Mashiach. Right, Tzoras that have to come. It's called Chevlei Mashiach, and it's like a woman who goes into labor. The pains of the pregnancy are nothing compared to the labor pains, and right before the birth, they get worse. So too, before the Geula comes, the Tzoras get worse and worse. Now, so what's it called? So it could be that we're Yod Yotzeh. Again, it doesn't have to be 2 minutes before Mashiach comes. It's a period of time before. So Halavai, we were Yotze already with what already happened. There's not to be anything more after that. Besides the fact that when we learned about Mashiach in the Yud Gimli Karim, we learned that Rav Sadia Gaon says that it doesn't necessarily have to be Melchemes Gog u'Magog at all. Depends the scenario of how Mashiach comes, whether that's necessary or not. So it may be not necessary, maybe that it already happened. So, but if that was Chevlei Mashiach, or was part of Chevlei Mashiach, then this is the scenario that we're still in now, preparing for when Mashiach will finally come, but it's all part of one period of history, which is called Ikvus of the Mashiach, which is called the Chevle Mashiach. So that's another idea. So if that's the case, then the Holocaust is part of a master plan that needed these kinds of tzaris to precede a geula, and then you can't find any reasons or whatever for specific things at the present, because it's part of a very big and ongoing plan from Bereishis till now. Pretty much the Maral says like that, Yonson Apeshit says like that, that to find reasons for these kinds of tzaris, he said it by Gzeres Tachbetat, some of them, that these are parts, these are historical processes that you can't figure out by attributing them to any specific generation or any specific thing. They're much bigger than that, much more complicated than that, and therefore they're totally beyond our comprehension. So according to these reasons, looking for any specific reasons, not shaykh, but at least as a way of understanding what part of what process of history it was.